You and I hanging around the radio Thursday, the 22nd of June, 2023 on Connecticut Today. We kicked off the show looking at whether or not the concept of citizenship means anything anymore. This after a controversy is brewing in New Haven. Fairfield Republican State Senator Tony Wong talking about a special panel discussion in Fairfield on preserving the state's coastline. While only in Bridgeport, blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by with his weekly update. So I have to ask myself the question again that I end up asking myself and asking you folks every so often, because I still haven't gotten a clear answer on this. I think I know what the answer is. I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is on this. But I have to keep throwing it out there, and maybe you folks can help me as well. I'm not too sure. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Is there any value left to citizenship? Do we hold any person or municipality in high honor, you know, considering citizenship? The fact that you are conducting yourself as a legal, law-abiding, good resident of your city or town, your state, or your nation. Why am I asking this? Well, I was going through a bunch of stuff that we're going to get to on the program today, and I come across this. And I know this has been, you know, bounced about and bandied about for years and years and all that. But I see this, and this is going on in New Haven, you know, one of the three big cities here in the state, the place of my birth. I have a lot of people around the New Haven area and in New Haven who listen on a regular basis. Thank you so much. Immigrants call for New Haven to amend the city charter to let non-citizens serve on boards and commissions. Now think about that. The city of New Haven is being asked to amend its charter to let non-citizens serve on boards and commissions, some of which would set policy. Now, do some of these people have good ideas? I don't doubt that they do. I don't doubt that they do. I honestly don't doubt that they do. All right. But having said that, would you feel right? Would I feel right? Would anybody in this audience feel right if you were living in another country? And you went to that country's leadership or the leadership of, you know, whatever municipality you were in and said, hey, I want to serve on this board or this commission or that commission or that study group, but I'm not a legal resident of your country. I may have come here and overstayed a visa, or I may have been, you know, the result of an arranged marriage or something like that. I'm not saying any of this is, perhaps a perchance, whatever. But how do you think some of those people would react? Well, you know, I have some really good ideas. I'm sure you do. But would you be surprised? Would you be in any way, shape, or form surprised or upset if those people said to you, well, yeah, thanks for offering, but no, you're not a citizen here. And I am just shocked that this is even suggested by people who advocate it. I'm sorry. If you're not a citizen, no. I don't understand how little now, in the year 2023, we have tossed aside the value and the honor of citizenship, and it drives me nuts. Dozens of immigrants want the New Haven Board of Alders to amend the city charter to let non-citizens serve, as is currently the case in San Francisco, Boulder, Colorado, and a number of other cities in other states. And they want to serve on the school board. A non-citizen wants to serve on the New Haven school board. Stop it. A non-citizen wants to serve on the City Planning Commission or the Fair Rent Commission. Stop. There is a systematic chipping away at the value of becoming a U.S. citizen that is driving me up the wall. They showed up in force Tuesday night past at the final Board of Alders public hearing on charter revision, with a number of those who spoke affiliated with the Unidad Latina en Acción, a city-based immigrant advocacy organization. Well, I have an idea. If you want to serve on these boards, become a citizen. Oh, can't do that, though. Whew. That would make sense, huh? And I'm not, and please don't even waste your time in calling me and saying, well, you're just anti-immigrant. You're anti-brown people. You do that, you're not going to get three words out, and I'll hang up on you. Then, after Alders on the Board of Alders Committee of the Whole that conducted the hearing repeatedly objected to speakers raising issues of alleged immigrant mistreatment that they said did not relate directly to the charter revision, more than 30 of the 50 or so people in the audience got up and they left the hearing. So they threw it. They had a tantrum. Besides letting non-citizens serve on boards and commissions, the primary issue people spoke to the Alders about was having more elected members and more parent representation on the Board of Education. So that was kind of a side thing they did there. But can somebody explain to me how an immigrant, a migrant, who I'm assuming is not a citizen, although they may be a fine person, a fine individual, a great mother, father, grandmother, grandfather, who actually has, and excuse me for the French here, who has the gullions to go up to any legislative body made up of citizens who were either born here or went through the toil and trouble of becoming citizens and say, hey, you know what? I have some great ideas. I want to serve on this board, this, that, and the other. Ah, you know, though, I'm not a citizen. Is that a problem? Yes, it is a problem. I want to drive the car, but I don't have a license. And you have, you can't even argue that anymore because some of these cities are letting migrants, I'm sorry, we can't say illegals anymore, migrants have licenses and states. It's ludicrous. You tell me, I don't get it. Please answer this for me. I'm being serious here because I don't understand it. Why have we devalued citizenship the way we have? Is it for a political is it a political means to an end? Is it all about votes in coming elections? Is it having a lack of balls to tell people no? Well, you know, I'm here and I've been here so many years. Okay, then become a citizen. Hundreds of thousands of people do it every year. But come on. Kika Matos saying, I'm here this evening to strongly recommend that the charter be amended so residents of New Haven who are not citizens can serve on boards and whatever. Hey, folks, I'm not trying to be a creep here. I'm really not. But where do people have the, if you'll excuse the phrase, have the gullions big enough to say, well, I'm not a citizen, but I want to take part in making policy? No. You want to do that? Become a citizen, and I might vote for you. But again, in the year 2023, oh, well, you know, they're not here, but they have such good ideas. And and if we really love them, and they want to just live the American dream. Okay. Become a citizen. That should be lesson one. American dream, lesson one. You're a citizen. Couple things to talk about with Republican State Senator Tony Wong of Fairfield. Tony joins us now on this Thursday. Tony, good afternoon, sir. How are you today?
I'm great, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Excellent. First, Tony, before we talk about this big meeting we have coming up tonight, understand that we have a few million bucks coming, a state grant for some remediation. Talk about that.
Well, it's $3 million from the Department of Economic Development, and it is kind of an innovative advocate for housing and reclaiming contaminated land. It's $3 million that's been allocated to the Department of Economic Development to focus on initiatives. And as the ranking member in bonding, I want to compliment the governor for making nearly a $200 million commitment in various initiatives to address housing needs in the state of Connecticut. In this case, we're going to reclaim that former Buller machine plant that needed to be remediated, but we're going to build 240 affordable units in housing that's accessible to the Fairfield Metro line for transportation, but it also will have multiple use. So it'll reclaim a vacant, unused space to get creative in economic as well as housing initiatives. So it really is something that we talked about. We have a housing shortage crisis in the state of Connecticut, but I've always said, instead of having developers develop and create kind of inconsistent structures and create such animosity as we've seen under 830G, we should be initiating a collaboration between state, local, and federal authorities in regards to building initiatives that fit in and create a multiplex and an ecosystem fit. This is a great example of it. You're going to have 240 units, mixed use, retail, reclaim unused contaminated fields, and be able to get close to mass transit for those individuals to not only be able to afford to live in a great town of Fairfield, but to be able to commute via train and other methods to get to work and create kind of a new future. So for me, I'm very excited about it, but it's also a model that we can really, really build on to address housing needs, but within the confines and the structure of collaboration between the entities, and not have developer-driven initiatives under 830G.
And Tony, I guess this spot is, for people that don't know it, a spot of what, some decades previous manufacturing here that I guess, sadly, you've got to go and remediate these areas, which is no small task. I mean, you're talking about going down several feet of soil, which may have had toxic chemicals leach in there, Tony, for decades.
And it's also a consideration because it's right next to a river. But I can share with you that the town of Fairfield and the state of Connecticut had some experience in that, because when we built Fairfield Metro over 10 plus years ago, we had to do the same remediation in the surrounding area. So we've had some expertise. We know what to expect in the surrounding area. So it's a manageable expectation. Nevertheless, it's going to be a heavy lift, and the $3 million is going to be a good start in order to kind of get going on that. But nevertheless, first and foremost, we want to make sure that the soil is cleaned up, and that should we use it for residents, that it is safe and beyond safe for the residents that will be using it for residents and commercial use. But nevertheless, it's an initiative to kind of clean up the environment and create useful space and address critical housing needs. And it's an economic development engine that we can all be very proud of. So it really is an example of win-win-win, where government is collaborating to address solutions. So it's something that I'm very proud of. And I want to compliment the governor and the leadership of the town to kind of come to those kind of resolutions that are win-win-win.
All right, so tonight now, 7 to 8:30 at the Roger Sherman Elementary School on Fern Street, what is going on there, Tony?
Well, here's the big news flash, Paul. We had a location change.
Oh, good. All right.
We moved from Sherman School to McKinley Elementary School. There was unforeseen construction at Sherman. They're redoing the cafeteria. So, news flash, location change, McKinley Elementary School on 60 Thompson Street in Fairfield is a new location. And it is a panel presentation on coastal resiliency, meaning coastal resiliency in light of the storm that seems to come every five or so years instead of the 100 years that we've anticipated. Climate change has created more severity and frequency of these kind of storms. Rising sea levels has created a significant challenge in regards to personal property, but also economics in the community and public safety. So what we want to be able to do is have experts in the area of climate change and initiative to explain that a 2-inch increase in sea level may seem negligible, but the amount of damage for the storms that we've had in the past 25 years would have been literally 30-fold in the damage that would have occurred. So we explained a little bit of the initiative, the reality and the science of climate change and how it's affecting our coastline living and rising sea levels. But then we also talked about how remediation and what federal grants are available to be able to kind of remediate and preserve our landscape and dunes by planting seagrass, initiatives that are undertaken by the Audubon Society in regards to coastal resiliency. So we can offer some initiatives for communities, coastal communities, to kind of preserve and sustain our coastlines. And the third aspect is, should these storms occur, we need to be emergency prepared. So we've had our community emergency response team and the town's emergency responses be able to offer some of the processes and procedures that you can anticipate should any storm in danger confront you, your family, or your pets, that you know that there's a system and a process to always be prepared. So it was a multiple-pronged approach, but the reality, Paul, is we have far too many of these storms, and hurricane season started June 1st, and it doesn't end till November 30th. And we just wanted to make people aware that we have to do our parts in conservation and preservation, and climate change and rising sea levels will pose tremendous challenges. But also, ultimately, should these storms arrive, we want people to be safe.
All right. Once again, a site change there tonight. It is moving from the original site that was the Roger Sherman Elementary School, as Tony said, the McKinley Elementary School in Fairfield, 7 to 8:30, a panel presentation on coastal resiliency. So, folks, if you have questions or you just want to soak up some knowledge, you know, get out there. It's 90 minutes and you'll probably learn a lot. Tony, thank you. Appreciate it as always and take care.
And, Paul, if people can't get to the program, they can check it out on Facebook Live at Senator Huang, H-W-A-N-G.
Oh, great. All right. There you go. Tony, thank you. Appreciate it.
Paul, thank you. Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, so, folks, if you can't make it out there, go to Senator Huang, H-W-A-N-G, Facebook Live. All right. So learn about the coastline. Coastal resiliency says here to preserve and protect our Connecticut coastline. If you want to go in person, the McKinley Elementary School in Fairfield, 7 to 8:30. If not, check it out online. And every Thursday at this time, what better way to kick off the 5 o'clock hour on another fascinating edition of Connecticut Today with yours truly is to welcome in Lenny Grimaldi to talk about onlyinbridgeport.com. Check it out for the buzz in the Park City. Lenny, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, what's cooking, Uncle Paulie? A lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah, I see that. And Lenny, you gave me the high sign here. I'm reading this. Apparently, all is happy, at least contract-wise, with the Bridgeport Police Department. What's up with that, and why are people smiling here?
So the rank-and-file police union membership has been working without a contract for about 2 years. So the police union has ratified a offer from the city for a 5-year contract, retroactive 2 years. So one of the big sticking points, and this has been a highlight that Chief Porter has emphasized since he took over the police department about 6 years ago, was that the premium contributions that rank and file officers had to make for their health care was really too high, and it really hurt attracting new recruits to the department. Mm-hmm. And a number of police officers actually left the PD saying the healthcare contributions were too high.
Wow.
So in this contract, the maximum percent cap went from 50% to a third. So this contract states that the contribution will start at 25% okay. for the premium healthcare contribution. It's going to be raised at 1% per year and to a reduced cap of 33%. So the rank and file was happy for that. It provides some savings, but it also, what it does for the chief, he can go out there and he feels it'll make it a lot easier to recruit new officers to the department.
Wow, you know, that's interesting, Lenny, because when you hear about municipal benefits, not just in Bridgeport, but everywhere around, people say, oh, they're gold-plated, nobody ever, complains about them. But I guess in this case, I mean, I had no idea, Lenny, what you just told me, that, you know, it was high enough to where they lost officers here. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, they lost a number of officers. Some that had their 25 years and will retire, or officers who had been on, veteran members of the department who said, listen, I can go to a cozier position in the suburbs, right,
yeah.
and get better pay and get better benefits. So in this situation, it brings the Bridgeport Police Department to more in line where other departments are as far as a premium contribution to healthcare. So it provides some stability within the department. And that's been the hallmark of this chief right now. He's a very cerebral person. And, he was able to persuade Mayor Ganim to say, hey, listen, we need this to recruit people. We need this for labor peace. We need it to keep the men and women of the department, happy and not have to worry about making this, premium contribution that's going to impact their pocketbooks.
Lenny, the Working Families Party, we hear a lot about that in Connecticut. You and I, obviously, in our various outlets talk about this. And you say WFP might be Plan B in the mayor's race. What's up with that?
So the Working Families Party is a liberal organization that has some relevance in the state of Connecticut. It has pushed a lot of moderate Democrats left for their positions, because a lot of Democrats want to have a ballot line in the general election. They play mostly on the state level for state legislature and gubernatorial offices, statewide positions.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't really played much locally in mayoral elections or city council races. They've been had more of a concentration in school board seats. But as I noted in my column, Plan B is this. So Ganim has three opponents, State Senator Marilyn Moore, John Gomes, and Lamont Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
And in about a month from now, there'll be a Democratic Town Committee endorsement. Ganim will be endorsed. His challenges will have a two-week window to secure more than 2,000 signatures to qualify for a primary. So Plan B is like, what if we don't win the primary, or what if we don't qualify for the ballot? Then we would have a second bite of the apple with a ballot spot in the general election. 4 years ago, the Working Families Party endorsed Marilyn Moore for mayor, but she botched the signature process, which is pretty easy. All you need is a couple hundred signatures based on the state rules. And she fumbled that process and did not make the general election. And after losing the primary to Ganim, she had no other choice but to run a riding candidacy, which, that's a very difficult, mountain to climb. So, that's been the way the politics has been going in Bridgeport, where you have, the Democratic primaries, that's the whole ball of wax,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So what this does is, rather than just having the obligatory Republican on the ballot, assuming WFP is going to endorse the candidate, it makes the general election a little bit more relevant, especially if the person holding that line can raise money, because the WFP does bring some workers and a few bucks to the table, depending on how cranked up they are on the candidate it's endorsed.
Fabulous. So they can flex their muscle there. Lenny, I see that some folks in Bridgeport may see and hear paving crews out there. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's all about, isn't the power of incumbency great? A couple of months from the primary.
Jeez, the paving the streets, Lenny. Lenny, you know what? It's interesting. I always tell this story on the show, but people have no idea, Lenny, how street paving shakes up politics here. I interviewed an area mayor, Lenny, years ago. You would recognize the name. I'm not going to say anything. And he told me off mic that he used to tell me the best speed remediation were potholes. He said, but he could only take that so far. Eventually, you have to pave them, right?
Yeah, you have to pave them, you have to fill them, because, you know, potholes after the winter season with the ice and the snow and the plowing, I mean, you could drive your car into one of these things, and her axle goes, and there goes your tire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it caused a lot of damage. But, yeah, so Mayor Ganim yesterday announced a $10 million paving project, and that's going to cover more than 200 streets. So he launched it yesterday on a downtown street next to the fire headquarters, and it's going to progress from here. So it's one of those quality of life things that generally plays well with the electorate. It can be a little bit, you know, difficult when the paving's done, but once it's done, people love it.
And the smell of blacktop, Lenny, can I tell you, it's one of those smells of spring and summer, isn't it? You can just take.
Well, yeah, I still have the high off of it from yesterday.
Nice, very nice.
Yeah, I did stick my nose in it. Just
little hot patch there. They drizzle that stuff around. It's like syrup on pancakes, Lenny. I can't.
Yeah, it's better than a GNC, you know.
Yeah, so. Right. I can't let you go without asking you about your old buddy, the former president, Mr. Trump. Lenny, I don't know about you, but I don't keep my golf shirts and stuff in the boxes with classified documents, but that's just me. Any further thoughts here, Lenny?
Well, the judge, so this is a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
This is the first time a president has been charged federally with anything.
Yeah.
And this is also the first time that the judge that Trump appointed is going to preside over a case that the president appointed a judge to, right? So that's kind of an interesting dynamic. But this judge has said, listen, we're going to start this trial in August.
Yeah.
And that's only a couple of months away, right? Soon. And I don't think that's going to happen. There's going to be motions that are going to be filed by Trump's attorneys. Said we need more time because all this discovery, the paperwork that's involved that the federal government has to shift over. You know, they have a window. The government has to shift over all this information in a certain period of time. So they're going to make a motion to delay. My sense is the judge will grant it. And if the judge doesn't, Trump will just fire his lawyers and say, I need more time. Because, you know, we're talking about a guy going through, you know, through lawyers like a knife through butter.
Oh.
You know, my former boss, he has a history of not paying people on time. So why does he go through these lawyers? One, you know, he feels he knows the law better than the lawyers, and they butt heads, and he says, get out of my office, get lost, and then sometimes he doesn't pay them, and then they leave, and that's why. There's two reasons why he goes through so many lawyers. One, they don't get paid often, and two, you know, they don't see eye to eye. So a lot of lawyers will just say, okay, I want $3 million up front, and so I don't get cheated.
Yeah, okay, retainer, yeah. Lenny, with all this insight to your former boss, am I going to see you on Fox or CNN or MSNBC during this? I mean, come on, you need a better agent out there. Come on.
No. I only got one saddle for one guy, and you're it.
All right. Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny, thanks. Have a great weekend. We'll talk.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
Thanks, Lenny. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, listen, Lenny, we've got to get Lenny on, you know, got to get him on Fox or CNN or MSNBC. Oh, man.